Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. We are back, back. I'm excited to be joined by the one, the only, Nikias Duncan, a.k.a. Nikias Dukon. Shout out.
Are you proud of that?
Shout out Mark Schindler of WBA.com for that one. What's up, man? So you survived the travel to Connecticut. We good? We got any stories?
We are. I don't know if I have fun stories for you. At the very least, my brain isn't working right now, so maybe they'll come to me later. No stories off the top of my head. I am happy to be home for a little bit. It has been a lot of travel over the last week and a half. Obviously, incredibly blessed to be able to cover the W Finals, my first finals series that I get to cover in person. Had a blast. Got to meet up with some amazing people. Got to watch some really good basketball. It was a fun time.
Good, good. And thank you for the coverage that you brought to the league. Thank you for the questions that you brought to those press conferences. Let's give this man his flowers here real quick.
This feels like a precursor to you being messy. What you got?
Nope, we're saving that. I am inspired by Asia Wilson's press conference, by the way. Not in the same exact way, but I am inspired by it. You know, when they make the movies, like based on a truth, like that.
Ah, I see. I see.
I'm not going full there. The hashtag is big time, by the way. You bought $275 UConn hoodies. Man,
that's not man, true.
Man's taking four trips to Las Vegas. How much UNLV apparel do you have?
Do not have any UNLV apparel at the moment.
All right. And this man walked by Bill Laimbeer, gave him the mean mug.
Wait a minute.
While singing Sweet Caroline in Connecticut. I told you, I'm here. It's almost fall. Respectfully, Messi has an end date, but we are here. And don't we're going to save it for later. But Nephrias Duncan, I got words for you, buddy. No,
what is... Hey, man, I just want the people, you know, we'll talk about the fries a little bit later. While we're finals adjacent, the WNBA finals did wrap up on Sunday. The Las Vegas Aces winning their first title in franchise history. It was some gnarly basketball on Sunday. We got a high-scoring first quarter from the Connecticut Sun in game three, set a finals record, bombing away 80% from the field, all that good stuff. The Sun had 28 points at halftime. The Aces barely eclipsed 30. They both wanted this one. They dug in. The game was junked up. Both teams came out in zone very early on in this game. Very physical affair. Steve, what will you remember from, we'll zoom out later, but what will you remember the most from this game four?
Game four, while it was extremely, extremely in the mud, like one of those, you know, you ever trip, get like a mud stain on your knee and you know it's deep and it's not coming out. It was one of those type games. But the fun of it was watching each team kind of go back and forth strategically. It was like a culmination of the two different styles trying to figure each other out. Mm-hmm. The Sun trying to go big, the Aces countering going small, putting two on the ball. So now let's put Courtney Williams a pick and roll. Let's have a guard screen so we don't have the same traps. Oh, wait, Asia hasn't done anything for like 8 minutes. The Sun trying to find the post-ups. We need to get Jonquil the ball. Oh, wait, now Stokes is in the matchup. Do we put Jonquil on the perimeter? Do we full court pressure Chelsea Gray? Like just the little things that came with that. And you saw players having different times and moments of being aggressive. Courtney Williams wanted all of it. Mm-hmm. Nuanna Bonner was not far behind. Jackie Young was letting it fly.
Yes, she was.
Raquana Williams, if only. IFONLY. That's the hashtag. But it was just a fun game to watch. And, you know, you got to have like, you got to dig deep into the styles of these teams to really appreciate that game. Because it wasn't always the prettiest basketball. But if you saw what each team was trying to do, it was a treat.
A treat it was. I think what I'll remember being in the arena, like we talked about this a little bit during the watch party when I could hear just the level of angst that was in the building during the first half of this game, especially when the Aces jumped out to that 10-point lead in the first quarter. you could just feel the Sun fans like, okay, this is great. We're here. We're coming off of a big game 3 win. This is our last home game of the season, regardless of what happens. Holy crap, we have 15 points right now. We have seen this version of the Sun before where the shots are not falling or the tempo's just a little bit off. Or we'll have a stretch where we get 3 or 4 stops in a row and the jumpers just don't fall. The push shots just don't fall. Oh, there's a Jonquel deep seal. Wait, she missed the layup. It might be one of those. Oh, no, here comes the foul trouble. You could just feel so much energy in the arena. And then the second quarter comes and 10-point lead drops to 6, then to 4. Then, wait, the Sun are leading. Wait, the Aces got the lead back. What's happening here? It was such a, to steal your phrase for a moment, it was such a tennis match between these two. And like it never really felt like anyone had a handle on it. Like, again, the Aces jump out to that 10-point lead and it's like, wait, here we go. Are the Sun going to score? And then the Aces just couldn't score anymore because while the Aces built that lead, the tempo in the game was very much shaped in the Sun's image from the jump. The Sun made sure this is going to be a junky affair. They're going to continue, if we want to zoom out to earlier games in the series. We just have length on Chelsea Gray all the time now. We're not messing around with Natisha Hyman or Courtney Williams on Chelsea Gray. Here's DeWanna Bonner. And if we switch up our lineups or you run something, try to shake her free, oh, here's Alyssa Thomas in the action. It was fun watching Chelsea Gray kind of work her way through these matchups. And we saw it earlier in the series where the Sun started with the full court press. I'm like, all right, bet. Kelsey, you bring it up. Then you flip it to Chelsea. Now we're getting to what we want to run. Or Jackie, you bring it up. Now we're going to flip it. And the Sun just weren't having any of that either. Like, okay, you get rid of it. We're still going to press you and keep a body on you. Now we're going to deny so you can't come off that screen in the middle of the floor. So now you're burning more clog. When you finally do get the ball, it's a defense that's staring at you. And also, hey, here's DeWanna Bonner or Alyssa Thomas as we get into the second half of this game. And so to your point, watching both of these teams kind of make maneuvers to kind of counter what the other team is doing. And then watching the counter after that counter, like it really was a lot of fun to watch. And I had the added benefit of like being able to feel everyone reacting to these different adjustments. It was just, the atmosphere was wild.
I can only imagine because the anxiety was jumping off the page, off the screen. But, you know, now that you touch on it, to me, it's going to be that fourth quarter. Like you mentioned the Connecticut, like that was just the Connecticut Sun in a nutshell for 3 quarters. Mm-hmm. Wait, what are they doing? Oh my God, they did the thing. Wait, no, they didn't. Wait, they're winning? And you got to credit their, like their guts and their will and their, we're going to find a way somehow, unconventional or not, but just that fourth quarter is such a tennis match of like just back and forth, a slugfest, a rally, whatever you want to call it. And the Aces, I'm going to remember the Suns' effort. I remember the Aces just hitting those, this doesn't matter shots. Mm-hmm. Like you have Alyssa Thomas pressuring Chelsea Gray. They try and get Courtney Williams in the screen by having Plum. Alyssa Thomas just fights over everything, blows everything up. Nothing's going on. Kelsey Plum gets it, makes a shot. And it's like, how many
do with that?
Yeah. How many of those did the Aces hit? Like if I was a Sun fan, I would be furious. Probably furious like a Storm fan is.
Yeah.
So that to me is what I'm going to feel. Because it just, that fourth quarter, while ugly, was just two teams just, at the end, just swinging back and forth.
And I love that both teams kind of went down with the ship in a way. The Sun were like, all right, we get to the 5-6 minute mark of this fourth quarter. We are putting the big three lineup out there. These are the 5 that got us here. Beat us. And the Aces are like, you know what? You know, De'Erica Hamby only played 3 minutes. Again, they were still trying to work her in following the injury earlier. I mean, to kind of end the regular season. So she didn't play much. They got as much out of Kia Stokes as they could. I'm like, all right, Ben, we're going small. And we are just going to figure it out. This is our best lineup. This is what we unlocked during the postseason. We don't care about the size advantage. We are going to find a way to get stops. And then offensively, good luck guarding us. And just watching those two teams dig in and watching, you know, to your point, you know, if only someone said something about Raquana Williams swinging a playoff game or 2 or 3 at this point. But, you know, surely there are podcast episodes out there somewhere. From someone who's to say. At any rate, but watching Raquana Williams hit the shots that she made in that fourth quarter. And to peel the curtain back, I actually had like a question in the show sheet. Like, wait, let me rewatch this game. But it didn't feel like the Sun were matching up the way I thought they would. Jonquel Jones on Raquana Williams for a lot of that stretch in the fourth quarter. I was watching it back. I'm just like, wait, why is Jonquel not on Jackie Young? Why is DeJuana Bonner on Jackie Young?
I don't think they anticipated the ball screens, in all honesty. I think they were thinking, we don't want Jackie Young to attack Jonquel off the bounce. And I'm freestyling here. Mm-hmm. But that would be my theory. We want to make sure we keep Bonner on Young, contain that penetration. Jonquel, maybe you have to deal with some things in space. I don't think they anticipated that level of pick and pop. Because, mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, that wasn't a major part of the package with Raquana. I mean, she was coming off screens. She was attacking, but it wasn't necessarily, hey, I'm coming into screen. And I thought it was such a subtle thing because as I was watching the series, we've talked about it. I was like, doesn't feel like Jonquel's in pick and roll a ton. Mm-hmm. And it kind of ties back to what we talked about with the Aces. Like, putting two on the ball kind of puts you in a pickle. Now, this isn't the pickle you thought you'd be in, but you've committed to showing. And now Raquana Williams is just hosting you with pick and pops. You got Chelsea Gray in the right corner. You not can't really rotate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes things interesting. And also, you know, Plum is a ball handler, different ball handlers. Mm-hmm. That was fun. But oh, it was so much fun watching the Sun kind of figure out, oh, we could just post y'all. And y'all, oh, y'all are doubling now? Once the Aces started doubling, I was like, oh, buddy. Hey. I think I told you to book your flight to Vegas because I was like, oh, no. They are cutting everything up. But, yeah, fun stuff.
Fun stuff, indeed. I will say just on the Raquana screening front, like, the Aces were sprinkling this in more so towards the second half of the regular season when Raquana came in. They would have her ghost and just kind of flow. And if it wasn't there, they'd flow into whatever. It felt more like decoy action versus, hey, the play is guard, pick and roll. And so to your point, like they did just kind of hammer that home in the fourth quarter. Like, all right, bet. Jonquel in space. Like we've been able to get some decent stuff out of it, but like the help has been so good. But now we just have our spaciest lineup on the floor. And I think the ESPN people showed it during the broadcast that that lineup of Chelsea Gray and Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, Raquana Williams, AJ Wilson had played 1 minute heading into the game four. Honestly, I don't even remember the 1 minute that had happened. It would have had, maybe it was like a offense defense sub type beat where they had it in for a few positions to add up to that minute. But at any rate, they just had not played the lineup against the Sun for any meaningful stretch. And it makes sense. The Sun are huge. Like, their starting lineup is huge. So once you have Breonna Jones, Jonquel Jones, and Alyssa Thomas in the front court and DeJuana Bonner, like, yeah, you probably don't want to go four guards, but the Aces went with it. And to that point, like, it just kind of exacerbated the issues that Jonquel had in space. Because, again, there were pockets they could find it, but the help was large and lengthy on the Sun side, and they were able to load up and kind of thwart some of it. You put that small lineup on the floor, and now it's Jonquel trying to deal with Raquana Williams ghosting screens and flying all over the place. It's a tough scene because at that point, do you go on a drop? Like, probably not. You put Jonquel at the level, like, Raquana is still a guard. So if they do something different, like, she can dribble well enough to penetrate, make a kick, and now your defense in rotation. It was just a wonderful counter. And I just kept waiting for them to switch the matchup. Because, again, like, looking at game three and game four particularly, it was a lot of DeJuana on Chelsea Gray. And then we saw Alyssa Thomas on Chelsea Gray. And I was wondering, like, at what point do you kind of swap it? Like, put Jonquel on Jackie Young. And if she's screening, like, okay, you stay in a drop. If she burns you from the perimeter, I feel like that would have been something that you live with more so than Raquana Williams. But that wasn't the choice that was made. And again, to Raquana's credit, she just buried him with tough shots. She couldn't have come up bigger in that moment. And so the Sun made the Aces adjust. They made them earn it, and the Aces earned it. It was just a ridiculous basketball game. Great atmosphere, tremendous shot making. We got Kelsey Plum making big shots. You mentioned the three she hit over Courtney Williams after what was looking like a dead possession again against the Sun unit. She hits a big one. She hits like a little floater later in the fourth quarter to kind of really seal the deal for them. It was just just thinking back to that, son, it was a tremendous game. It really was.
It was a team effort from the Aces, which kind of capped off a great team year. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if there's one thing you can point to that they did. I don't think there's one player you can point to that they did. They all played a role. They all did they were supposed to do on both ends of the floor. And I tie it back to just the journey this team went on. And, you know, I always, every time I watch them, I give a salute to Coach Hammond. I give a salute to the staff for the level of buy-in they got from this team. Mm-hmm. We could talk about the offensive shift, the philosophy shift. We can talk about the defense and the defensive coverages and how they shifted those. None of that works if you don't get the buy-in. I don't care about how much talent you have. I don't care about your schemes. If you don't have the buy-in, eventually you're going to hit a wall. And you can attest to this. When the Aces had their struggles, or when you asked the Aces questions, their answers lined up pretty well with what Becky Hammon was talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's our defense. It's on us. That speaks volumes. When the players are echoing the message, you've done more than you need to job-wise. And I thought it was just incredible to watch this team have such a self-awareness and a poise and an understanding of who they were. Rarely did it feel like they got rattled. They lost at times, but it never felt like, hey, we can take the Aces out of what they do. I made the joke about the half-court offense, but generally they believed in what they did. They never really tried to get out of that. And you can have a point where now Kia Stokes is in the starting lineup after a Hamby injury. Raquan Williams has that step up. Hamby has moments coming back off injury. You get that kind of play out of Asia, out of Chelsea Gray, out of Kelsey Plum, out of Jackie Young. All four of those players took a leap.
That's a hard thing to do.
Like, all of them took a leap at the same time. That's a lot. And that was probably the fun part of watching this Aces journey. So, you know, salute to Las Vegas. Figure I get my rant out.
Oh, there you go. It was good stuff. Like, I'm glad you hit on the buy-in. Like, this is something that Becky Hammon echoed post-game. And I was kind of asking her about what the process was like to get that kind of buy-in defensively. Because we've talked about this. Like, we know what the Aces have done differently offensively. They have spread the floor. They embraced the three-point line. Thank goodness that that finally happened. But they opened things up offensively. But defensively, this is a team that did a lot. This was a team that amped up the aggression. This is a team that would throw in a bunch of Jones. Shout out to, I guess, friend of the program now, Kevin Pelton, who recently wrote a piece on how the Aces kind of brought zone back to the W and how much zone they used this year and how they were able to sprinkle it in throughout the postseason as well. And so not being afraid to do that, particularly when it went to the small unit, and just the level of buy-in that it takes to do that. To play zone against the Sun at that kind of size discrepancy, that takes a lot out of you. And even when they were doing more switching, this is, you know, going back to the game one, I believe, this is Kelsey Plum battling with Jonquel Jones and fronting in the post after some mismatches. This is Chelsea Gray, like going back to the Storm series, Chelsea Gray just defending Tina Charles. And even in this final series, just defending Alyssa Thomas sometimes off of a switch, or she just got the matchup when they did go smaller. The guards had to do a lot of fighting. And even when they didn't have those matchups, when the shot goes up, they have to battle with Jonquel Jones or Breonna Jones. Speaking of Breonna Jones, 11 points off the bench in the game four, zero rebounds for her. The Sun went three big for a large portion of this game, had a massive size advantage. The Sun won the rebounding battle by two in game four. That is a massive upset and a huge shift from the game three in which they blow the Aces out. They set a finals record with 66 points in the paint. Just, again, like, they took that blow post-game, game three. Age was like, hey, I'm going to take this on the chin. Like, I don't feel like we came out with the right energy. Becky Hammon opened the presser with, like, hey, I don't think we had the right energy. They beat us in mindset and mental toughness. Didn't bring it. Asia echoed the same thing to a full accountability. The players also echoed the same thing. Coming to game four, they just fought. Game was in the mud for pretty much the entirety of it. And they fought and they battled. It didn't matter what the size advantage was. And to your point, that just speaks to the level of buy-in that they have, the understanding that they had, the level of accountability that was apparent throughout the entire roster. And to get that level of buy-in on both ends was spectacular to watch for me. It was nice to hear about, to talk about, to ask about personally. And ultimately, this is just an Aces group that earned it. did different things. They took individual leaps. Again, Asian MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. Kelsey Plum just skyrocketed this season. Jackie Young's your most improved player. Chelsea Gray, we know what she can do, but post All-Star break, she barely missed. And then the postseason comes, and she really barely missed. Having Kia Stokes doing different things offensively, having to assume a larger role, first before the hammy injury, and then with the hammy injury, just like, oh, no, this isn't just a lineup change. Now we need you. And being able to fill those gaps, take on some of the tougher lineups, going back to the game four. Like, Kia Stokes had Alyssa Thomas. She had Jonquel Jones in the game four instead. Freed up Asia a little bit to be a helper, at least in theory. But she had to bang with Jonquel after she just beat the Aces over the head in game three with a bunch of duck-ins. So just taking on those challenges, embracing more of those off-ball screens to help the Aces offense in the half court when teams are trying to help off. Like, Kia Stokes did a lot of little things that mattered. And again, Raquana Williams, hired gun off the bench. If you think of what the run that Chelsea Gray had this postseason, just this season, but especially the postseason, the run that Kelsey Plum had this season, Asia winning all of the awards, Jackie Young winning most improved, Raquana Williams slams the door in a closeout finals game. Like, it really could and did come from a little bit of everywhere for the Aces this year. And again, it's just a testament to the level of buy-in, the level of trust, and just the level of talent up and down this roster. And the fact that they were able to put it together like this in year one of Becky Hammon, it's special. And other teams should kind of be worried, considering that most of the entire starting lineup is locked up through next year. And so, like, the core is here. And if they win in year one, like, I don't think buy-in's going to be a problem heading into next season. So the Aces are really set up here. It's been a really impressive run for them.
All right, I'm back. Did I time the Nekias Aces rant well enough?
Wow. Wow.
All right, we're good. It's a good snack.
You proud of that?
Extremely. Shout out Nat. Shout out Rich. Shout out Aces. Shout out Vegas, man. And also shout out the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of team that can kind of get lost in the cracks. And their run may not be respected. And we know how they feel about not being respected. So I would feel amiss just not talking about the run they made. The effort they played with. The mindset they had. Their will to find a way. Their defense all year long. It wasn't always pretty. They did leave some food on the table. But you had to deal with them. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a team who didn't feel like they had to deal with the Connecticut Sun. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you felt good about the win you just got. You had to go win. And I'll remember that from that team. But you got to toss that out there.
No, I think that's fair. And this is a Sun team that, you know, just to bring it back, like, they proved me just wrong. Like, I had to tweet during the Sky series, like, I don't think there's a I don't know if there's a better team that I believed in less than this Sun team. Because I just felt like this is a team that could not get out of their own way until they got out of their own way.
Oh, the series didn't start till they were on the ropes. Didn't start. Wings, thanks. We're good now. Sky, thanks. We're good now. Didn't have enough blows for the Aces, but as soon as, like, they're all the way in the corner, all right, it's time to go.
It's body blow time. It's body blow time indeed. It just going up and down the roster very quickly, like, Natisha Heidemann, who didn't end up closing the game for, but think about the role that she had to accept once Jasmine Thomas went down very early in the season. Like, she was very much supposed to be their sixth player, come off the bench, provide a spark. If she's shooting well enough, she can close out some games for you. A little added level of dynamic guard play alongside Courtney Williams. She just had to assume the starting spot. Just like, no, you have to hold us down. You have to help direct us and get us into some sets when Alyssa Thomas isn't doing so. And she stepped up. Courtney Williams, after everything that went on in Atlanta last year and in the offseason, to find, not even find a home, to rediscover the home in Connecticut. This is another stint for her. And she talked about it post-game, where it's like, you know, obviously it sucks that we lost, but, like, I can't even be upset because a lot of people had written me off. Like, people thought I was going to be out of the league with everything that was going on. And for, you know, the post-game was her, Jonquel, and Alyssa Thomas. She pointed to both of them. Like, for those two to be my first call when everything was going on, like, hey, we want you to come play with us again. To have that level of love and trust, like, she was like, I can't even be mad at how this really ended, because like people stopped believing in me. They didn't. They gave me a home. They empowered me. They believed in me. And I was able to contribute to a finals team. And she was huge in the game three victory. She came up big in the game two, didn't end up in a victory, but she played well for the most part. And so watching what Courtney Williams was able to do, Alyssa Thomas, first triple-double in WNBA finals history. And then followed up in game four with yet another triple-double. But the defense that she played all year long. And again, with Jasmine Thomas going down, she did assume a lot of the playmaking responsibilities and made it work in transition and in the half court. Jonquel just kind of fitting in where she got in, coming off of MVP season. That is not an easy thing to do. Said having MVP caliber season and then be in more of a select your spot type situation as things are trying to get figured out offensively. And still have moments to where you can kind of remind folks like, hey, I am a top five player. Like, I can impose my will. We saw that a lot in the game three in particular. But the mindset that she had to go, that she had to display and kind of sort through and find her spots there. This was a tough Sun team. This is a physical Sun team. In their own way, it was a fun Sun team to watch. I was very impressed with the way that they were able to shape so many games into their will. Even if they didn't win, even if the shots didn't fall for them, a lot of times it was just Sun basketball being played. That's not an easy thing to do. And with all of the outside noise surrounding that team, for them to pull together the way they did during this postseason and make a finals run, it's wildly impressive. They do deserve their flowers for the year that they had.
You know who deserves more flowers? Becky Hammond.
I'm down for that.
You know who doesn't deserve flowers? The folks that wrote Becky Hammond off. Take your quote-unquote resumes that you appreciate and throw them over the top rope and actually appreciate talent. Why don't we try and do that?
Oh, there we go.
Why don't we try and appreciate knowledge and understanding and IQ instead of just, oh, you did this. You're dope. Sorry. I don't buy it. To tell Becky Hammond, oh, you've only been in San Antonio. You've never been a head coach. You sound dumb, unnamed NBA source.
Tell him.
Well, I'm just saying. And she dropped bars in the press conference. What was the two quotes? I had two quotes she had. Retweeted one of them this morning. I wanted to run through a brick wall. Every hard thing that I've gone through has built something in me that I've needed down the road. That didn't get you going?
That's good stuff.
And then she said, for me, it's not really about proving other people wrong. It's about proving myself right. And that is the bar and the key to life. Always believe in yourself. The validation stuff, nah. This got to come from inside. That's all I want to say. Bring me your serious topics, Nikias. looking at this show sheet, I want to be respectfully messy, and you got all sorts of stuff.
No, it's fun. It's fun. I just have a couple of questions about the series to close this thing out for real.
Okay.
Well, one, your finals MVP was Chelsea
Gray. Chelsea Gray, Chelsea Gray, Chelsea Gray, Chelsea Gray, and Chelsea Gray.
Chelsea Gray did win finals MVP, averaging 18 and 6, 67% from two.
Period.
45% from three.
Period.
How dare you? Don't bring that mess on. Oh, man. Oh, goodness. Chelsea Gray was incredible. She really incredible throughout this entire postseason run. We have never seen a shot-making run quite like that one. Just period, end of sentence. We have not seen shot-making. What on earth did we watch for a month?
Look, like, I want to put as much respect on what Chelsea Gray just did in this playoffs as I can. I don't know if I have the words for it. It was insanity shot-making-wise. Mm-hmm. Any kind of bucket you wanted or needed, she gave and provided. In all types of ways. You want the deep threes? Got you. You want the pull-ups? Got you. You want the step backs? Got you. You know how frustrating it has to be to have watch someone playing at such a level that's about to beat you, hits a shot to beat you, and then almost runs you over as you try and call a timeout because she's beating you?
Yeah.
You think Sue Bird's ever going to talk to Chelsea Gray ever again?
It might take a minute. It might take a minute.
again, I'm speechless. No, I'm speechless. I made, like, literally, I'm just pulling the curtain back. I made the tweets because Chelsea Gray had multiple buckets. I wanted to make sure they got out there. I wanted to put them out there because it's not out there enough. That's a different story for a different pod. We ain't got time for that.
All right.
I was running out of captions. I was running out of captions. There's only so many ways you can say sheesh and goodness gracious and my lord and what is happening and what on earth. I ran out of all my catchphrases. She was inevitable.
That was just some nasty stuff you saw from her. If I could... Oh, goodness. To give you a little bit of a break, I will do some reading very quickly from friend of the program, Mark Schindler of WNBA.com. This is a tweet from him this morning detailing what Chelsea Gray did statistically. She averaged 21.7 points per game and 7 assists throughout the playoffs. A 72.7 true shooting percentage. The league average was 54. 18 points above the league average in terms of true shooting percentage. 54% from three, 65.5% from two, 63.2% on shots between 3 and 10 feet, 63% on shots between 10 and 16 feet, 69.2% on shots between 16 feet and the 3-point line. And like over 80% of her shots were unassisted. What the heck did we watch from Chelsea Gray throughout this postseason run? Like, this is the literal embodiment of the sliders being up. This is Hall of Fame space creator. This is Hall of Fame MIDI magician. This is Hall of Fame dead eye. This is gold blinders. This is gold volume shooter. It's video game stuff what Chelsea Gray was able to put together. She deserves her flowers. You are hitting me with a skeptical look.
No, you're right. I don't have anything else to add. I'm just hoping this does not fade into a Chelsea or Asia discussion.
I will say. I will say there's a discussion to be had about who had the better final series between Chelsea and Asia. I do think there's an argument to be made that Asia could have won it. We're not going to hang too long on it. I just think it's important to note that this is finals MVP and not playoff MVP. So if you decided in these four games that Chelsea was better than Asia, that's fine. But I hope that the people that chose Chelsea are because of those four games and not the 10.
Nikias. Chelsea Gray had A, an incredible playoff run, and B, 26-5, missing 4 shots in the closeout game on the road.
That's true.
She did it. She did it. Asia was great, but Chelsea did that.
She did.
She did that. She did the thing. Man out here saying, do better.
What do you mean?
You can't get revenge for the Connecticut send you. You go, that's going to be with you for a while, dog.
What you mean? I am not holding that at all. And also, shout out to Chelsea Gray. On a more personal note, I got to ask her, I got to follow up on that question following the game for her. She did give me the answer on what she was seeing about the vases, about the Aces spacing and what they had to do differently in that front. Obviously could not answer that before game two, but she told me during that, before Quanta Williams asked me if Connecticut sent me, she did say, hey, find me after the finals so we can have a discussion about it. And she came through. Woman of a word. I appreciate that. And I guess just while we're here, like, I do appreciate just the candidness of the players and also Becky Hammon when I was able to talk to them and really just anyone that I was able to talk to this year. Like, this W season has been a joy from, like, a journalist standpoint as well. Being able to gain insight, being able to talk to Kurt Miller during the finals. Like, it was a humbling experience, to say the least. So I do appreciate everyone that kind of helped me along the way in that regard.
You're right.
Not you right. All right. Well, while we're on the W, we are playing a little bit of catch up since we did not have the Friday pod.
I see what you did there, Nefrias.
Do you want to have this conversation now?
We can have the conversation. So let's talk about the all W teams.
Okay. Let's talk about the all W teams. They were announced last Thursday. The first team was Aces guard Kelsey Plum, Skylar Diggins-Smith, again, hope she is doing okay, Breonna Stewart, Candace Parker making the first team, and Asia Wilson. And on the second team, we had Sabrina Ionescu, Alyssa Thomas, Nneka Ogwumike, Jonquil Jones, and Sylvia Fowles on the second team. Steve, what were your initial thoughts on the teams when they were announced?
I was a little surprised. The first team I pretty much had nailed, except I had Skylar midway through the first half of the season, and I switched to Sabrina towards the end. Mm-hmm. But I understand how that goes. For me, I was a little surprised by couple names not being in there. But mm-hmm. I think Jonquil got the respect. And, you know, she, it's not like she played a horrible season. She was still Jonquil Jones. I had a tip of the cap for Jackie Young. And then Elena Deladon, again, not being voted or seen as a top 10 player, continues to boggle my mind. Mm-hmm. I have zero issue with Sylvia Fowles being voted to the second team.
Okay.
What a fantastic career she had. What were your thoughts, Nikias?
First team, I'm basically with you. Second team, little surprised with Sylvia Fowles. I'm less surprised considering how the all defensive teams went. Which, seeing Candace Parker on the all-W first team and just not making an all-defensive team is just insane to me. Like, I'm going to be questioning that for until next season, if I'm just going to be completely honest. Like, that just boggles the mind. I'm not sure what was watched if Candace Parker's not an all-defense caliber defender. At any rate.
We're going to start talking about that at any rates. I'm scouting the at any rates for next season. I'm just letting you know, buddy. I got an eye on those.
Why you got an eye on those? Okay. Beyond that, so less surprised considering how that voting went that Sylvia made the second team. I would not have had Sylvia on my team. I think on my second team, I had Jackie Young in her place. To the Elena Deladon front, again, for me, it was just a game slash possession play deal for me. Why I didn't have her on. So I would imagine that that would be the viewpoint of the voters that didn't have her, was because of the games missed. Because we're just looking at the games that were actually played. Like, I don't think Sylvia was better than Elena Deladon. I don't think Jackie was better than Elena Deladon. She didn't make it. But, like, again, I think that's what I do think the games played a factor in that. Beyond that, though, like, I think the teams are pretty good. Like, the Sparks had a lot going on, but Nneka Ogwumike was incredible just about all year long. And you already touched on Jonquil Jones. Like, it wasn't her MVP season, but she was still very good on both ends of the floor. Alyssa Thomas, just by the voting, she just missed out on first team. And we saw her value during the postseason as well. So I think just that final second team spot is probably the one that has the eyebrow raised for me. But overall, they seem pretty solid teams. While we are still on the W, some quick news that came through the pipeline today. We were recording on a Monday night. The Dallas Wings not retaining Vicky Johnson as head coach. The head coach search will be on the way for them. Steve, are you surprised that they decided not to bring her back?
A little. The timing feels odd just because of the way the Dallas season ended. Mm-hmm. I guess you lost to the Sun. You did push the three games. You made a really strong push towards the end of the year without Orike in the lineup. You separated yourself from whatever the mess was at the bottom. You won what I believe 18. That has to be the most they've had since they've been in Dallas. Unless you were really just holding something back, the timing feels off to me. Now, if they just, you know, really felt like, hey, we can't win in the playoffs with this, or they had seen enough perhaps beforehand and she needed to win a series to stay, you never know about that kind of stuff. But from the outside in, feels a little off, unless you have someone in mind, which happens sometimes. But that's a different story for a different day. It's just, what are you building? How many coaches are you going to have in how many years?
Yeah. You don't want this to get like Atlanta-ish, like what they were going through last year in terms of the personnel changes. At least that wasn't happening in season like it was in Atlanta. But I do kind of wonder, like, one, I'm with you. Like, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't bring her back, at least for next season. If you want to make a move from there, then sure. Because it felt like she was starting to find some things in the second half of the year. And with Arike going down and them having to really pull together. Like, it felt like they hit another level. And so just from that standpoint, it's like, okay, what's, again, like, give it a year, like, let her figure it out. I will say, like, there was a lot of chirping earlier in the season. Like, we talked about this on the pod with a Charlie Collier tweet, Izzy Harrison tweets, talking about the rotation minutes in the front court. This was before Tierra McCowan became full-time center and just kind of took off. But there was that stuff. And so as someone that does not have inside sources or whatever, like, just kind of looking at that, if the locker room was an issue, it doesn't matter if they had that late season stretch. If ownership didn't feel like the players are going to be invested, like, even going back to that, we talked about this on the pod as well, the report from Christina Williams that Alicia Gray's probably out of there. Izzy Harrison's an unrestricted free agent this year. She might be out of there too. So, like, if there is discontent in the locker room, then you're in a position where you kind of have to make a move. And so I get it from that standpoint. My bigger question now is, like, what do the Dallas Wings want to be as a team? Like, we know they want to be good. They want to compete. But, like, what is the style of play that they're going with? Because we talked about this throughout the season. They just did a little bit of everything. They were a big team. They were a small team. They were a team that played with tempo. They were a team that slowed it down and posted up a ton. They did a lot of things. It never really felt like we knew what the identity was. Like, there's a line to be drawn between a team that can go multiple and can kind of shape shift depending on what their opponent is, and a team that feels like they're always searching for something. And it felt like more of the latter for the Wings. And I think, I mean, some of that has to fall on coaching. But there are some personnel questions where, like, okay, there are a lot of guards that can be played. There are a lot of bigs that can be played. There are a lot of young project players that kind of need time. There are also some vets that you need to pencil in. What is the Arike Marina Mabry dynamic? How much do you believe in it long term? We know they're both very talented. We've seen them both look very good without the other. We've seen pockets of time where they've looked good together. Do you believe in this long term? And so, again, my biggest question heading into this coaching search now is, like, the search might not mean too much if you, from the top, don't have a firm understanding of what you want to be and how you want to approach making that happen. So I'm curious to see where they go. What do you think the best version of this Wings team looks like? That may be an unfair question, but I am curious to see, like, what your feelings are on this roster right now.
I mean, they just probably got to make a choice. Pick one of those two. Pick the bigs you like. Fill out the rest of the roster. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you've seen pieces, but you just got to go with one thing. Your offense has to be a little bit better. Need a little more versatility. Defensively, you got to be a little bit stronger. So you just got to tilt the roster one way or the other. And you have to make a decision on who you want to be at the top or near the top of that. Mm-hmm. Be my best guess there. Trying to get me packed up by Dallas. No, 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 sir.
I'm not trying to get you packed up at all. But, like, this is, again, this is the fundamental question of this organization right now. Because you look at the roster has talent. They have talent in every position group. But, like, I'm not sure what the cohesion is right now. And I think that has to come from the top. And then you find your coach that can bring that vision to life. I think if they're just going to bring another coach in and say, hey, here are all these pieces, figure it out, and just kind of leave it there, like, that can work. But that doesn't seem to be, like, a setup that I would be comfortable with from a head coach entering the job. Like, I would want to have an understanding of, okay, these are our seven, or these are our four or five. And then we'll round it out from there, depending on what you want to do. But, like, these are, like, there has to be some sort of baseline. And I'm curious to see how the Wings figure that out and what that line is going to be.
Well, sometimes it's good to not have a core that you're stuck to, in a sense. It's sometimes tough as a coach to walk into a scenario and be like, hey, here's what you got. You have to use these four. So maybe they can paint their own vision a little bit. Just throwing a little different perspective out there. I don't know.
No, I think that's fair. I guess I come from that perspective just because they have, like, Arike's on a max.
Gotcha.
She's locked in. Alicia Gray, like, we talked about her in the first half of the year. Like, she was all-star caliber. She didn't end up making the team, but, like, she's that good. Man, shoot, that part might not matter if the rumors are true that she is going to be looking for a trade and one goes elsewhere. But I'm saying, like, they have those kind of talented players to where you feel comfortable saying, okay, we want to keep them and build around them versus it just being like a I guess like a roster full of like B minus players to where you can kind of move things around if you want to. Like they do have some core pieces, I feel like.
I got you.
Okay. Beyond, I'm just curious. So like all right. So the Wings job is open. The Sparks job has not been filled yet. And the Fever job has also yet to be filled. I am not doing this with you. The vibes are good. The vibes are high. I am not taking Indiana disrespect for you. Let's
sorry.
You're not funny. I'm not letting you do this. Anyway, let's move to the NBA side very briefly. We'll get the fun news in first. We did get a little bit of CBA negotiating type news that dropped from Shams Charania of The Athletic.
Did you just say fun and CBA in the same sentence?
Yeah, oxymoron, am I right? It's,
there is someone who hit that 15 button so fast right there.
We'll say fun comparatively to the other topic that we have to hit on the NBA side. But just... Yeah, I just want to keep my vibes high for a minute. But one of the things being discussed between the NBA and the NBPA is the draft age reportedly being lowered from 19 to 18, which would open the door for high school players being able to jump straight to the league if they so desire. I don't think I've talked to you about this yet. Like, how did you feel about the age requirement being raised when it was a few years ago?
I got it. I mean, for the option was great. You never necessarily want to box people in. But at the same time, there were some folks who were coming out that maybe shouldn't have come out. Mm-hmm. And that was where I was like, okay, I kind of get it a little bit. But now I understand going backwards. And I think it helps having multiple pathways. I think it helps having it be an easier process to kind of test the waters and then come back in that way. And I think it opens the door for certain people to make the leap if they are ready. I think there's more information now than then. So hopefully it will work out for all parties involved. But once the Ignite existed, you knew, okay, we're opening doors here. And, you know, it still always felt kind of weird telling these players, hey, yes, but also, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, keep the doors open, I guess is my freestyle thought.
No, I got you. I guess for me, like, I never understood the, well, not, I won't say I understood. I didn't agree with the restriction. Like, it felt odd to me to be like, hey, especially after having the success stories that they have had with some of the bigger stars in the league, it felt weird to be like, okay, no, you just can't do it. Like, I felt like the options should always exist and that it's going to come down to one, the players' camp, like, hey, be realistic with your guys if you feel like they can get drafted or if you feel like there's a pathway to success with them making the leap from high school. And on the other side of the coin, like, hey, these multi-million-dollar scouting departments, like, it's kind of on you to determine if this player is ready to make the leap, if they're ready to play for you. Like, y'all just kind of have to do your jobs better.
Where's the multi-million-dollar scouting department? Yep.
I was going to leave that one alone.
Which scouts are you talking to?
You're not about to get me packed up. At any rate. But no, like, it's kind of up to your scouting department too. Like, hey, kind of pinpoint if this guy that wants to make the leap, can they fit? Is there a pathway to development? Can you give them the time and attention needed to develop them into productive NBA players? If not, you probably shouldn't draft them. But like, that's kind of on you. So I just didn't like saying, like, no, you have to be 19 as a way to kind of safeguard against bad picks. Like, a better way to phrase it, like, pick better, scout better.
Well, there was another elephant in the room to why they had to stick around, but we ain't got time for all that.
Okay. Well, we will revisit that at a later date, I suppose. But I'm excited to see what this means for the next couple of draft classes in particular, depending on how quickly they get this into the CBA or how quickly the new CBA is agreed to. Class of 2024 might be insane. So we shall see what that looks like. The other thing also coming from the Shams report, we'll just read this one very quickly. The NBA and NBPA are discussing measures to allow players to cite mental health issues as an ailment similar to physical injury per sources with knowledge of the talks. Similar to when players treat external injuries, this new addition would give players the ability to treat their mental health concerns with the same gravity, allowing for things such as the seeking of second opinions and psychiatric visits. I'm here for it. Like, this is something that should already be implemented, in my opinion. And I'm not going to revisit all of the Ben Simmons thing, but I do think just the way that mental health and mental health issues have been discussed largely, like, I do think there's a lot of education that needs to be had there. And there's a level of seriousness that needs to be given to these type of issues. So it's good to see the NBA and the NBPA looking like they're coming to a common ground there to get it into some writing and to really help these players out and to give them pathways to give themselves help when they need it. So I am all here for it.
Agreed. Couldn't say it any better myself.
There we go. And to the other NBA news that we could not get to on Thursday/Friday, Suns owner Robert Sarver was fined $10 million and suspended for a year following the report of all of the mess that he has done over his tenure as Suns owner. And I will just say the money's kind of whatever, which sounds wild out loud considering it's $10 million. But like, Robert Sarver is a billionaire several times over. $10 million is just not going to do anything to him. The year suspension feels weak to me. I don't think that solves what this is at all. I don't think that is a fitting punishment considering the multitude of people that he affected, his treatment of his employees, the treatment of the female employees there in particular, the comments made. That is not a man that should be owning an NBA or WNBA team, much less both. 1 year just does not feel like it does much of anything. And it was nice to see Chris Paul speak out. It was nice to see LeBron James speak out. Both of them pretty much saying like, nah, I'm disappointed in this. He doesn't need to be an owner. So I am curious to see what this year is going to look like, if there's going to be a push or how serious the push gets to remove him. But like, I'll put that on record. Like, I think he should be out of there. Like, there's no place for Robert Sarver in the league.
No. He did horrific things. How do we have the conversation? What is the conversation to be had based on what he did? I don't know. I didn't want to talk about this on the pod because it's two thumbs down from me.
Right.
I mean, eyes and a heart, you could see it. But this is the situation we're in. So let's try and talk about it, Nikias.
Okay.
There's a word that sticks with me. I think precedent is what kept him around.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong, that's not what I'm saying. But I think there are some folks, and when we circle back to when everything went down in Portland, there's some whispers. Not about the actions, but about the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Precedent. I don't like it. Like, just be better, and you mm-hmm. never have to worry about this. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the press conference and the suspension didn't hit as it should.
It did not.
And so, to me, I got a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
One, I think the press conference was a mistake. Like, if you're going to address it, you really got to address it. And it kind of felt like it was almost like, hey, I couldn't do it. But then he said more. So, and then it was like, all right.
Oh, boy.
And it felt like maybe to a degree, it was, I don't have enough right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't work in the moment. And you see the uproar from Suns executives. You see the uproar from sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Does something have to push this past the 5-yard line into the end zone? is, I guess, the question I have.
It feels not, like...
Not should it. Mm-hmm. Just wondering if it's, hey, something's about to charge this up.
No, I understand where you're coming from. Like, I think just zooming out and in a vacuum, like, I think we're very much on the same page here. And so, like, I don't think that's going to be misconstrued at all. The press conference really did rub me the wrong way. Like, I do understand, like, as frustrated as I was with the decision first and foremost, or the punishment first and foremost, and just Adam Silver, like, I do understand, like, Adam Silver does kind of work with the owners. And to your point about precedent, like, I do think the reason that this punishment wasn't harsher is because, like, Robert Sarver isn't the only owner that has had unsavory dealings with people that work for him, to be frank.
It's hard, man. Think of the details that we got and the size of that report and the scale of people that are interviewed. And you have to know there's probably so much more.
Right.
Even with that, there's probably so much more that went into that. And the people that had to live through that and then relive through that and relive that trauma. It's hard to not, you know what I mean? That's where I'm like, he's got to go.
Yeah, that's what bothers me. That's probably what bothers me the most about it. Like, there were multiple women that broke NDAs to be interviewed for the bombshell report from ESPN's Baxter Holmes. So many people that were victimized by this man had to relive all of that. And for the punishment to be basically a year-long vacation is what it feels like. Like, I know it's technically not what it is. But for pocket change in a year away, like, that doesn't feel... It just doesn't feel right at all. And then what bugs me about the press conference in particular is, like, that press conference was never going to go well. Let's just start with that baseline. With the punishment being what it is and with the subject matter being what it is, the press conference was not going to be positive. There was not going to be a positive reception. But for there to be any sort of justification about, well, you know, some of this stuff happened back then, he's changed since then, he's shown remorse when we just have proof from his own mouth that he isn't super remorseful. It doesn't feel like he did anything wrong. Very much just Shane Baxter Holmes and the BS reporting. I'm doing air quotes because people can't see me, but all of that. And then in the apologies, you know, I want to apologize for the harm that I've caused, and I'm going to work to be better. Like, it's bogus is what it is from him. And for Adam Silver to, in a way, like, try to justify why the punishment wasn't harsher than what it was, it rubbed me the wrong way. So I can't imagine how the victims and, or just, if you want to limit the scope to female fans of the Phoenix Suns, if they had to listen to the press conference or just see the punishment in general, like, I can't imagine what that felt like. It was wildly disappointing.
I got nothing for you, man.
I got you. Like, it's just, it's just disappointing. And I do hope somehow, some way, that we really do get some momentum for Robert Sarver to not have the position that he has. Because, like, he's proven multiple times over, like I said this, I think during a watch party, like, one of those items from the report, in a perfect world, in a just world, one of those items should be enough to get him out. And the fact that there were pages upon pages upon pages and interviews upon interviews upon interviews and incidents upon incidents that involved him in mistreatment. Like, it's wildly disappointing. It's wildly disappointing.
You got the dribble hand off side of here.
Yeah, just we got to be better, man. It's just I don't like it. Hashtag Sarver out. Let's go into the mailbag. Thank you for everyone that sent in questions. If you have questions for us, there's no good way to segue out of this. You just have to excuse me. It's fine. But for anyone that has questions for us throughout the week or whenever they hit you, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to them. We have some good ones in the chamber today. Let's get to them as we close this bad boy out.
I don't have the password.
Not doing this with you. Anyway, first one comes from Chase. We'll go back to the W very briefly. Would there be a tangible defensive benefit giving her shooting splits to intentionally leave Chelsea Gray wide open?
No.
Conversely, would there be a benefit to assigning an offensive player to contest her in certain sets designed for her?
No.
So it's very much satirical, just playing off the fact that Chelsea Gray shot much better on contested shots than she did on contested ones.
No, I know it wasn't serious, but also no. Like, how are you going to dare shoot someone who is willing to shoot all the time? Like,
like, no. I'm more in that. Like, again, I knew that, like, this is satire. But, like, I'm also enamored by, like, what a set would look like to have one of her teammates, like, contest the shot. I'm just imagining Chelsea running, like, Spain pick and roll and, like, the bottom screener coming up and contesting her instead of popping out to the three-point line. I'm just like, you know what? This is, like, the visual is killing me. But yeah, again, just a testament to how ridiculous Chelsea Gray was throughout this postseason run. Really post All-Star break, but specifically throughout this postseason run. The first serious question is going to come from Warren, who asks simply, where do you rank 2022 Asia Wilson in terms of WNBA individual seasons?
Where do you rank it?
Like I struggle with these questions on the W just because, like, I'm recently getting deep into it. Like, I can pull up Basketball Reference, see who's done what, and kind of gauge from there, but, like, I would just be missing a lot of the minor details there. If I do want to narrow it down, again, like, Asia's one of, what, 7 players in W history to win MVP Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. So, like, just that designation combined with all W first team, all defensive first team, like, I feel like that on its own kind of puts her in the top 10, 12 conservatively. In terms of individual seasons, you add in the title that's her and Cheryl Swoops now with the MVP Defensive Player of the Year in the title. And it would have been those two as well if she also had the finals MVP. So it's just Cheryl Swoops right now. But I think conservatively, you got to go top 10.
And that's fair. I mean, it's a historic season no matter what.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure Lauren Jackson would want to have a word with you. She almost went 50, 40, 90, 23, and 9 with 2 blocks.
Yeah, that's nasty.
I mean, so she might raise her hand. That would be my thing. But no, it's going to and should go down as one of the most historic. Best is probably going to be subjective, but you're not getting a lot of people having a run like that. We may not see it again very soon. It's one of those seasons that we'll probably appreciate 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm. With you. Again, like, the numbers were what they were. Almost 18 and 10, a pair of blocks, a steal, 37% from 3 during the regular season, over 50% from the field. But what she was asked to do on both ends of the floor, like, particularly defensively, everything she was asked to do from a responsibility standpoint, from a scheme standpoint. And then you get into the postseason, the minute load. Forgot to mention this during the Game 4, played all 40 minutes of that slugfest. The 161 out of a possible 165 minutes in the Storm series. Like, she just brought it. She just brought it. Even when she didn't shoot well, she brought it every night. And so, again, I think you start top 10 and then you get into the weeds with some of the legends. This one is going to come from Pedigree Man Mo, who starts off
Triple M. All right.
Triple M is in the building. He says, before my question, I wanted to say thank you guys for everything you helped me with, knowingly or unknowingly. My question is, how impressed were you with the Aces seamlessly switching from zone to man mid-possession?
Extremely. I think, you know the respect I have for, let's say, Miami zone defense. And how it's a zone, but they also will stay matched up and shift. The Aces definitely did that. And not just mixing in different defenses, mixing in zone, but also making it look like man and keeping the sun off balance. That was very, very good stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not easy to do.
At all.
Especially when you consider the sun, A, have size, and we're trying to exploit that size. So now you're not only kind of zoning, switching, you're scram switching, you're rotating with limited hesitancy. Like, that's the impressive part to me. When you're able to defend with purpose like that, and intention and communication and rotation, that's the good stuff.
I echo your sentiments there. Like, it was wildly impressive. And this is why I wanted to ask Becky about the buy-in after game four. Like, what goes into telling your group, hey, this is our base. We also want to do this. We also want to do this. If the game situation calls for, we also want to do this. I need you to be equally prepared to do all those things on a whim. And so for the Aces to be able to, again, play as much zone as they did and to be able to disguise their coverages as well and to mix in different things, like, it speaks to a team that is highly intelligent. The buy-in was there. Like, I was very impressed with what they were able to do. I'm not going to add too much to what Steve said. He already nailed it, but very impressive stuff from the Aces. This one's going to come from Jason. Assuming all of the Sky's unrestricted free agents are willing to play next season, who should they prioritize re-signing? He says, I would probably start with Candace Parker and Azaree Stevens, even though that leads to big questions in the backcourt if Vander Quiggs, which would be Courtney Vandersloot and Allie Quigley, move on. Where do you land with the Chicago Sky?
Candace in the backcourt. If you're going to make the run, you need them. Mm-hmm. That's not slander to Azaree at all.
No, I understand.
But if you're gonna make this push and be win now, that those are the pieces you need. Or else you might as well reinvent the wheel.
I am with you. Like, I would say, again, like, the cap stuff is just going to be, there's a reason James Wade won Executive of the Year. Be able to craft his team and also fit them within the salary cap restrictions was insane. I think if I'm ranking who they should prioritize, like, I do think Candace is still one, because she was still one of the best players on the planet and should have made an all-time team. But you prioritize Candace. I think you go, I would rank it Candace, Courtney Vandersloot. I would go Azaree Stevens. Like, I do think you lock her in as the young piece with a lot of untapped potential. And then from there, like, I would probably go Allie Quigley and then Emma Mieseman. Though Mieseman was much better than Allie Quigley this season. So it's not necessarily a talent thing there. Like, I just think you need the shooting, again, if you're just going to make the run. And if you're keeping Candace and Azaree, then I think you're okay with letting Emma go elsewhere. But I think that would be my ranking of the five. But we're in agreement. Like, you got to bring Candace back. Like, I don't think, in terms of the title picture, I should specify, but in terms of the title picture, if you're not bringing Candace back, like, what does the rest of it mean for you?
I feel you.
She is the linchpin. All right, this one's going to come from Cyrus. He has a pair, one from the W side and one from the NBA side, which leads into the second half of this. So the first one, he says, greetings from Johannesburg, South Africa.
What? All right, Cyrus. Wait, people listen to this outside? Wait.
Yes,
I just be talking.
Dunker spot is quite literally worldwide. Anyway, is Neka Ogumake likely to go down as the best player of African extraction in WNBA history? Could Arike Ogunbowale eclipse her? So we'll start there. Would you give that title to Neka?
Yes. Would you?
I lean yes. Like, the fact that she has multiple years left to play at an all W level, I feel like, barring injury and all that good stuff. But, like, she's very firmly in her prime right now still. So I would lean yes on that front. In terms of the second part of that, the Arike question, like, the possibility exists. Like, there's going to have to be title runs at a certain point to get her there, I feel like. And again, like, circle back to the earlier conversation, we got to see where Dallas is going direction wise, what the makeup of the team is going to look like, what they want to be and who that coach is going to be. Like, I think it's going to determine a lot of that for Arike. But yeah, I will give the nod to NECA. And to lead us into the NBA section, very generic question here. What more do the Milwaukee Bucks need in order to win another championship?
What more do they need, like roster-wise, playstyle-wise?
I think the answer to that would just be yes, but it was whichever direction you want to take it in.
I just think they need to be able to have options with their smaller lineup. That's all for me.
Okay.
You've got the recipe. You've got the pieces. They just don't necessarily have the lineup versatility that they need to elevate to that level, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Teams are comfortable attacking Grayson Allen and letting him do things offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got Pat. But also, who's the next one? Like, where's the versatility come from? That's the one piece for me.
I guess we're on similar pages then. I would say just the forward room would probably be where I look, just because you definitely felt it once Chris Middleton went down, that they immediately became smaller, because like he was really the only 6'7", 6'8" guy they felt comfortable playing. Like, as much as Wes fought and the way he still fights, he's still a productive role player. Like, he is 6'3", 6'4". Pat Connaughton had a breakout season last year, 6'4", 6'5". Grayson Allen gave him good regular season minutes. The Celtics did pick up him some, 6'3", 6'4". The Bucks didn't trust Jordan Wara. Like, he's the next of that ilk there. And so their late season addition heading into next year, I think, is going to be Joe Ingles. He's going to miss the first part of the season. He kind of fits that mold as like a 6'7", 6'8" dude that can do multiple things for you. But you have to see what the recovery is going to look like. How good is he going to be defensively? Because there was, even before the injury, like, there was just a massive slip in what he was defensively last season. And we talked about this on the pod during the regular season. He wasn't the same guy. So can he recapture some of that? Because if he can hold up the shooting, you don't have to talk about the shooting with Joe Ingles, period. And more importantly, if we're projecting some of their smaller lineups, like, the decision making is going to, he would immediately become the best decision maker in that backcourt, or just in that small ball unit, sans Giannis. And I think you could take some of that decision making pressure off of Drew Holiday or Chris Middleton in spurts if you're able to play those three together. And so again, that's going to be dependent on health and just where he is physically, but we shall see what Joe Ingles looks like. But that forward room is kind of where you look, because they haven't been able to replace like PJ Tucker as the big wing defender. And so we'll just see where it goes. Where you you got me on a Bucks tangent. Like, this is what you signed up for. I am sorry.
This is why you picked the question. This is why I need the password. This is why I need the password. He's just slanted into another Candace Parker question and talk about the defense. We got an Asia question. We got a Bucks question. Nah, I need the password.
Are the questions that were asked to us. Hey, my fault.
I'm coming with an alternate hashtag or alternate email address.
Not the alternate. Okay, you got it. This one's coming from Joey, who sent this question in during the finals. So that's why it's going to start off with. I know it's in the midst of the WNBA finals, but I have really been focusing on the Eurobasket competition, especially Franz Wagner this summer. Watching him has got me thinking just how talented last year's draft class really was. In the 2021 draft, six guys really stood out to me after watching the season last year and really separated themselves from the pack. Those six being Evan Mobley, Scottie Barnes, Franz Wagner, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, and Josh Giddey. This is the deepest amount of top-tier talent we've seen from rookie class in a while. So my question for you guys is, which of these guys is going to separate themselves from everyone else and become the face of this class? And who are you most excited to see develop next season?
The face is probably going to be Cade.
Mm-hmm.
But with this class, all of them are going to contribute. And I think all of them can get better. Like, Franz doing what he did last year and then having this summer, okay, I'm intrigued. Evan Mobley has another leap to take.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's hard. I think Cade may end up being the face, but Jalen Green may have something to say. Like, he made a run towards the end of last year, and he has a room to get better. Scottie Barnes was really good last year. So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know how big the separation is going to be. You know, I don't know if it's going to be one person sprinting from the pack. I think the pack's just going to get faster. and someone's going to end up winning the race. So I'm excited to see all of them develop. I want to see what Mobley brings different offensively. I want to see what Barnes looks like, even more confident. I want to see just how much of Franz do we get? Do we get with the version of when no one was around for a little bit, or do we kind of get, does that get compacted into a, I don't want to say smaller role, but a more efficient role? And now you can also do those things. Does Jalen Green carry over the end of the season, add more patience, add more playmaking, continue to score? It's a lot.
It's a really fun class, man. That's why I like this question. who becomes the face? I think it's Cade. One, I just think he's the most talented guy of that group. Beyond that, like, the low-hanging fruit in regards to his supporting class, supporting cast, my apologies. But I think low-hanging fruit there is I think we're going to see a more efficient Cade this year. Like, he had some stuff going on with his jumper to begin the year. But also, he played in a phone booth and without a high-level roller for most of the year. And so just surrounding him with more NBA talent and having the young guys around him develop, like, we another year of development from Sadiq Bey, who just randomly had a 50-piece last year, but grew as a scorer. Like, having more spacing around him, having a dynamic roller alongside him, having multiple rollers that he can play with now. Like, the roster being better is just going to accentuate what he already showed and what he already does. And you add that into the improvement that he should make by himself. I think it's going to be Cade. Like, I think this is going to be the Cade class. And I don't say that to disrespect any of these other rookies or second year players at this point, because I think they are all going to be very, very good. But that's my answer for the first part. As far as who I'm excited to see develop, the answer is Evan Mobley for me. I am very curious about what the scoring looks like for him. Because as that progresses, like, he already maps out the floor well. The passing ability is already there. Like, the physical tools we don't have to talk about, the insane length, the release point. If the jumper comes, if it's a quicker jumper and a more efficient jumper, I just don't know what you do with someone with his dimensions. I don't know what you do with that. So I'm excited to see, especially with the addition of Donovan Mitchell. Like, I just want to see, one, how is Evan going to grow as a screener? Because that has to come. He has to be a better screener than he was last year. But beyond that, what does he add as a shooter? What does he add as a self-creator? Because we saw some really fun flashes, particularly in the second half of the year before he went down. Evan Mobley is my answer. I'm excited to see what he does. This one is going to come from Andy. Says, first off, I love the pod and all the breakdowns you guys do.
Thanks, Andy.
Following you guys has made me significantly better at watching the game off ball and defensively. Oh, there we go. This upcoming draft, the Pelicans have swap rights with the Lakers. How likely is it that the Pelicans exercise those swap rights? Or more simply, do you see the Pelicans finishing with a better record than the Lakers, barring a redacted trade? This is spicy, because I feel like the hype train for the Pelicans, and I don't say that like negatively, but I feel like the hype train for the Pelicans is really taking off. We just got the recent report that Zion apparently just has an entire new body now, and he feels more athletic than he was, which seems like an impossible thing considering how ridiculously athletic he is. But like, a healthy Zion with CJ McCollum, with Brandon Ingram, with JV, with Herb Jones, this is a very talented group. Are they going to be better than the Lakers?
I could see it. I mean, it's all going to depend on the Lakers' start. But if you ask me who has to figure out more stuff at the start, the Lakers or the Pelicans, I'm probably going to go with the Lakers. Although the Pelicans are going to have to kind of move some pieces around, figure some things out, recapture some of the magic a little bit. But I could see a world where the Pelicans have more wins than the Lakers. I could also see the Lakers surprising everyone and actually playing defense and either trading Russ or figuring out what to do with Russ. Now we're back to the same Lakers conversations. So I wouldn't be surprised.
And that concludes.
I'll go with sure.
You'll go with sure.
Yeah. And yes, that does conclude my Lakers talk for September. Don't ask me about them till next month.
Okay. All right. Well, then we won't be talking about the Pacific Division until October now, will we? Oh, gee. What's going to happen is that we're just going to get a Russ trade by the next time we pop. Yeah, anyway. I think the Pelicans finished with a better record than the Lakers. I think I'm with you. The Lakers do have more to figure out for very obvious reasons. I do think, and we'll talk about this a little bit deeper once we get into the actual division previews coming soon, but I do think the Pelicans have some things to figure out defensively just with what they want to do with a full year of this cast. But like, I believe in their belief in Willie Green. Like, he had those guys, even when they started the year poorly, he had those guys playing. There was a level of buy-in immediately. We got the best out of Brandon Ingram. The CJ thing just really brought them to life in the second half of the year. And they had a fun showing in the postseason against Phoenix. I believe that they're going to carry this momentum over. So I will say Pelicans over the Lakers this year.
Shocker.
I don't know if that's sarcasm or what.
Yes.
This is going to come from Nick. Which NBA team's early season pump fake are you most likely to fall for? In the past, I think the Wizards have been mentioned. And which have you seen too many times to fall for this year? Steve, which pump fake are you falling for?
Probably going to fall for the Wizards pump fake again. Talk myself into that. I feel like I'm going to fall for the Blazers pump fake this year. Who else's pump fake could I fall for? There's probably a good team. Can you fall for a good team's pump fake? I don't know. Like, does Philly count? I'll probably fall for the Philly pump fake. The Nets. That's probably the one I'll also fall for. Whose pump fake have I seen too many times? I was going to say Charlotte, but Steve Clifford's going to do the things that they have to do. So that takes them off the table. The Kings pump fake, they have to make some shots before I fall for that one.
You're absolutely going to fall for the Kings pump fake. No. I don't believe you. I flat out don't believe you. No. I'm going to stop you right there. I do not believe you. Your answer is the Sacramento Kings. You are absolutely going
When have I failed for the Kings pump fake on this pod?
No. The Sabonis trade. What do you mean?
I just said it was good. You said Tyrese Halliburton was a top three player of all time. I don't know what you want me to do with that.
I said top seven, let's be clear. But no, I just you're absolutely going to fall for the Kings pump fake.
That man was ready.
Nah, I'm not falling. That's the pump fake I'm not falling for. You're not throwing me off the Kings scent from you. No.
All right, well, fine. I'll go to the bit. The Raptors.
Not the bit. You're just never going to know peace in Canada, are you? Oh, man.
Montreal. Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Edmonton.
He's going to name landmarks. Oh, goodness. Anyway, the pump fake that I am going to fall for.
Young player does things. Young wing is good.
I feel like, honestly,
Young team is better than expected.
You don't know me. What do you... Oh, Jesus. The Pistons were my pick to make the play-in leap heading into the offseason. So,
No. We talked about this. I made the Pistons pick a year early. You got to go stick with the Thunder and the Wolves and all them. Let me get one victory lap, all right?
Okay. Well... Just let the record show that I'm picking the Pistons in the right year, in my opinion. But you were on the Pistons first, so I will let you have that one. No. That's fine. You were there first. It's true. We have podcast episodes. You were a year early on the Pistons, like you were a year early on the Liberty. But the record is there. I will give you your props. You got it. So if I'm not allowed to say the Pistons, I will say we're going to get like a 5-3 start from the Magic. I'm like, you know what? This defense is going to do the thing.
See, here's
and then they won't be able to score anymore.
Here's the thing. Mekhi's has praised so many of these young teams that if any of them take a leap, he gets to shoot the pump fake.
I respect the young talent and the young build, which I don't know.
The pump fake he's not taking is a veteran team. Pick one. He won't buy into him.
I think my answer, we'll roll it over from last. I think my answer is going to be Chicago this year. And like, a lot of this isn't their fault. The Lonzo knee thing just scares me.
Well, this man came to double down.
No, it's less, like I think I was a year too early on the Bulls, oddly enough. But yeah, the Lonzo thing really does scare me. And like, DeMar has to do it again. He may. But like, the Bulls kind of blitz teams in the first half of the year in clutch time. And that's the kind of thing that doesn't typically roll over. So we'll see. I think the Magic and the Bulls would be the teams I will land on. And to close out to the mailbag segment, this one comes from Mike. He says, after seeing the Kaiser's complaints about fries, I want to ask you what you two think is the best kind of fry. Also, which fast food place has the best fries?
All right, Nefrias Duncan, let's peel the curtain back for the folks not on the Bird app. Nekias went on the Bird app and talked about how much he's been traveling over the last 3 weeks, and he's been eating so well, and he's basic. But, yo, if you can't tell me about these fries, then you need to just go home. Like, do better. If you're working at a restaurant, you should know the difference between shoestring fries, crinkle-cut fries, steak fries, and whatever else. First off, my number one question is, why are you asking people what kind of fries they got? You didn't know the fries before you walked in there? Got a whole phone in your pocket.
If it's a restaurant that doesn't have, like, I do my Googles before I go to places, because I need to see what type of fries the establishment has, if it's going to be an establishment for fries. So I try to Google. For the places that don't have pictures of, they'll have every dish except, like, fries. And so for those places, I have to ask, like, hey, what type of fries are these? And it just, again, like, this doesn't, I'm not losing sleep over it. Like, it's not a world problem or anything like that. It's a thing that annoys me. I should not ask you, hey, what type of fries do you have? And your answer is, I don't know. Like, I went to a restaurant, this was before, like, playoff travel. I went to a restaurant, I would say about 3 weeks ago. And our server told us, unprompted, that she had been at that restaurant since it opened, like, 7 years ago. If you are a seven-year vet at a restaurant and you cannot tell me the type of fries that the establishment serves, what are you doing?
Maybe the fries ain't that deep for her. Hey, man, we got fries, man. I don't know.
We got fries.
You got fries? Like,
her answer was, I don't know the type of fries, but I like them. And so I just had to trust the word of mouth. I ordered the fries, and they were like beer battered fries, incredibly mid. Beer battered fries are not very good. I'm just like, I just would not have ordered fries had I known.
We found the root. It's important when people speak, you find the root of the issue.
What do you mean?
She crossed you. You trusted her in a moment that your gut told you not to trust her. And now you are mad at yourself for that moment.
It's because less
you knew better. And then you were served the mid fries and you looked at yourself in that moment and said, I knew it. Did you finish the fries?
I did not finish the fries, no.
You would do a little half piece.
Okay.
Half basket.
Oh, terrible. But no, it's less about that. But it's just like, if you don't know, you don't know. Like, again, you should. But if you don't know, go ask the cook. Go ask someone.
What's it? They just like, why
do we just leave it? No, that's not how it works. Like, I'm not asking for like the calorie count or what oil you're using to fry that. I don't care about all that. But like the basic, what type of fries are these? That matters. That matters. If she would have told me, oh, these are beer batter, I would be like, nope, never mind. I'm fine with my regular order. That would have been it. Well, less about the trust and stuff. It's just like, where was the effort? I want to know what I'm ordering, what I'm paying my money for.
Oh, this might be the best Big Mad. All right, so what's your favorite type of fries, sir?
Is this the best? Goodness. Anyway,
give me the steak fries from Red Robin all day.
Steak fries from Red Robin.
Or McDonald's.
Okay. Oh, I think I tweeted that too. I was like, don't tell me, like, oh, they're the fries from McDonald's. I was like, you say that, but like, is it shoestring? Is it match? But whatever.
Come on, Nefrias. Give us the number one fry. God, this man is upset.
I'm sorry. We back. But, oh, darn it, those fries, man. Anyway, the crinkle cuts from Zaxby's are really good. The waffle fries from Chick-fil-A are very good. Like, the McDonald's fries are good. but the Zaxby's fries are Chick-fil-A fries for sure. Like a well done crinkle cut is, I feel like, highest ceiling, lowest floor for crinkle cut.
Okay. All right. I mean, well, while we're here, let's dive into it. Just give me a thumbs up or a thumbs no. The hashtag is big fry. Curly fries?
Depends on where they're from, but curly fries are solid.
Cheese fries?
No.
Steak fries?
Only when they're hot and also crispy.
Shoestring fries?
Yes.
Garlic fries?
No.
Sweet potato fries?
Not a sweet potato fry person.
Potato wedges?
Yeah, still mad at KFC for getting rid of potato wedges, but yes.
Chili cheese fries?
No.
How important is the ketchup for you?
Very important.
But can the ketchup ruin a good fry?
Can it ruin a good fry? No. It can only enhance a good fry.
You never had no bad ketchup?
I'm very particular about my ketchup. Can't say that.
This is a gold mine.
What is
never mind. We're to be continued on this. I've never heard anyone say they're very particular about their ketchup. Is this a brand thing, a temperature thing? I have so many questions.
It's less that I go back to the one time in my childhood, my mom bought a bottle of ketchup. And she got like it was the no salt added. And I didn't know it was no salt added.
Oh, and this man was upset.
I was very upset. What the heck is this, man? I couldn't say that because, duh. But I was like, what the heck is this? This is not, what is this? So like, it's less about the brand, like Heinz ketchup is very good, but like I'm fine with like non-Heinz ketchup. But if we go in like no preservatives, like fine. If it's no salt, just don't do that to me. Not a spicy ketchup guy either. Like
good spicy ketchup. Oh, I love a good spicy ketchup.
Nah, more for you. That's fine.
All right, man. All right. So I'm glad we did this.
So like we all learned something here.
Just elite content. Someone's gonna be so confused by this podcast. They did 10 minutes on fries? You got free throws?
I do not.
Like, oh, buddy. All right. Did Connecticut send you?
No, they did not.
How do you feel about the Aces half court offense being a meme and then actually winning them the championship?
It's pretty funny. Props for them for figuring it out.
Okay. Brian Windhorst said that Jay Crowder is a player who's available on the market right now. Hasn't Jay Crowder been saying that for the last 3 months?
Yes, he has.
Okay. Well, what's more shameless, your Eurobasket Rudy Gobert post or the all caps when KZ Akpala signed contract?
More shameless. Wow. If the answer is no, earnestly.
Okay.
But... oh, man. Like, I think the closest one would probably be the KZ thing, because like he does have to find a thing on offense in the half court.
Do you like the Timberwolves new jerseys?
I do like the Timberwolves new jerseys.
Will you like them if there's no alternate court?
I'll still like them. I think the alternate court would really enhance them, but yeah, I'd still be a fan.
Okay. How hard was AJ Wilson trying to get back to earth during your question to Chelsea Gray?
Absolutely. We got a. She almost fell out the chair laughing. She like burped midway through. She told Chelsea that she was talking too fast. She nodded enthusiastically as Chelsea was talking about that. She talked about how she wasn't aggressive enough on the ball in game. That you like watch that press conference one for the answer, and then the second time around, just watch Asia during the entire thing. It is. Asia was not there. She got to the post-game presser and immediately said she was six shots in before we even started.
Top tier. Asia, top tier, living her best life.
Yeah.
Also, I love that they couldn't use her wired segments. So the only pieces they were just like 2 seconds of clapping and yelling.
Yes.
Better comeback, the deep to the seven or Dennis Schroeder to the Lakers?
What a shot. Oh my goodness. It's Dennis Schroeder by default because I don't know if Man, the season's been over. So, nah, the Deep did some stuff, man. He shouldn't have been. Just a terrible person. Like, no, I'm not. No, it's Dennis Schroeder.
Okay. Who said yes quicker, the Lakers or Dennis Schroeder?
Probably Dennis.
What was Russell Westbrook's initial reaction to this signing?
Probably, well, can't say it on this podcast. The second reaction would probably be one of my famous like 12 question marks in a row.
I had a bro up there. Someone got an a bro text. Mark Cuban with Lethal Shooter. Thoughts?
Oh, I'm not going to say anything nice.
Okay, no. It's fine. All right. Wancho really thinks he's Bo Cruz, huh?
The movie empowered him. Follow-up question. Have you seen Hustle yet?
No.
What are you waiting on?
Life. Nikias, have you ever in your life not showered from Sunday to Wednesday?
No. But, like, also.
Yeah, the man earned it.
No, I have not had a Sunday to Wednesday stretch in which I have not showered. If I had, you know what my answer on this podcast would be? No.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, like, the answer is earnestly no, but also, as I tweeted, one, bathe. If you have the facilities to do that, if you are physically capable of doing that, and you have the living arrangements to be able to do that, bathe, clean yourself. And if you do, and if you don't do that for whatever reason, do not tell people that you did not do that. Don't share that voluntarily. I do not understand for the life of me the people that just volunteer these things. Why would you just say, like, unprovoked? How is this a sentence enhancer for you? Yeah, dog, just got the shower after 3 days. Who does? Why? What are you gaining? You are only gaining side eyes and a brow raises for that behavior. Don't do that. Clean yourself.
Oh, that was so much better than I thought it would be. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. All right. Kyrie Irving or Jonathan Isaac?
Do you have another question? Because that's the pod ending there.
Period I, period uh.
I feel like that's the answer to the... Oh, God. I guess? I don't... It's better to be odd than I suppose.
What play was Doc Rivers trying to run? Triangle or the flex?
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. Leave us a review. Maybe not leave us a review after that one. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us, at least for now. I don't know. We've lost the clean rating at this point. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Super follow that man. The content's tremendous. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Well, it was a play in January. I thought maybe he was going to run floppy.